Sam Thompson. Hey, Shalash, my man. Good to see you, bro. Paul, how you doing, man? Got some good gents in the house already. All good. Mr. Clarkson as well. Look out. He'll be a good one for tonight. We got some good conversation coming in tonight, I think. Thompson, how you doing end of the day, man? You feeling good?
Bit of a scratchy throat, but okay.
Yeah, I was I had to answer your message in the WhatsApp. Yeah,
That's
take
all
it
right.
easy, man. Don't let that kick in.
Yeah.
You've got the immune protocol at home. You've got zinc and NAC and stuff at home, yeah?
I have NAC. I don't have sync. I'll get sync tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, make sure you get some of that, don't you? Well, but I'll message you on WhatsApp with specifics. How's the wooziness? How's that feeling? Have you not gone back into that yet?
All good. No, vitamin E, no wooziness.
There we go. Looks like we found the answer straight away. That was a nice quick fix. Good man. That's good to hear. Mr. Samiro, how you doing, man?
Gavin, good. Nice to recognize all the faces here.
We got the old muscle cam coming back. So this is like a muscle cam reunion.
That's right. I didn't
Looking
even plan this for today, but
oh,
cardio.
bad. Well done, brother. How you been doing the last few weeks, brother, since the camp, okay?
Yeah, doing well. I just went to Vegas for spring break with the family, so I had an off week, but dialed it right
Yeah.
back in and yeah. Got
Good
pretty
work.
deep in some RDLs with some help from Steve.
Nice, man. Progressing well.
Yeah, we were able to get almost horizontal. I don't know how, other than bracing. I was like, I'm well outside of my range of motion as determined briefly at camp, but Steve's like, you got this. I want to see you get lower, brace, breathe, close ribs. So gave it a go and didn't feel any, I felt sturdy.
That's it, man. We'll actually break that down this evening on the nighttime here, but your evening, but on the call today, because obviously we're going to be talking about pain and injuries and what's actually the main thing causing joint pain and so forth. So we'll cover that in a little bit of detail. And that one, the RDL will be a good one to break down. And then Chris has actually just been through a few issues with his knee and a few other bits going on, and we cleared that up pretty well, right? So it's just going back to a few things that we look at on the drawing board, checklist it off. Let me get back to basics on those things, you know.
Sounds
Paul,
good.
how you doing, brother?
Perfectly fine.
Good man. You winning?
Sorry?
You winning?
Yeah, as much as I can.
Love it, brother. Good man. Good man. Mr. Clark, give us an update on the week, man. How you doing? What's gone well in the last 7 days?
Oh, same old work
Crushing
getting
it.
in the way of my training a little bit, but working
Yeah.
around that, yeah.
Chris's main aim in life now is just to be a full-time athlete, trains 2 to 3 times a day, works just like that little side hustle he does in the back. He's just a
Ah,
full-time
pain in the
athlete.
ass.
Kicking ass, man. Well done. Shalash, up there, give us an update, man. Biggest win in the last 7 days, mate. Yeah, muted, bro.
Had a probably shitty week for me. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I was in Portland, and my wife's dad wasn't doing well. So basically, just all at the hospital and eating hospital junk and hanging out there. But I think getting in better shape with what we've been doing, I don't feel like I fall off because I came back. Maybe I was like a pound off. Didn't feel, still feel resilient, and then got back on it Monday. So,
So
and
it
I did the
sounds like
first new workout for you, the one you had set up.
how'd it go?
It was great. I kind of like it. It's like less legs. So,
It's a strategy, right? So it's like we have to build the capacity up first. Obviously, you got it. And when we look at your week, man, you've got a lot going on through the week in terms of the plyo stuff, your basketball coach is getting you to do. You've got your basketball on top of that. We got some obviously cardiovascular work to improve on as well in terms of VO2 max. So the front end was like, okay, let's frequently get the lower body stuff done as much as possible. the loading shouldn't be as maximal when hitting that frequent, but it's still a lot of demand on the lower body. So it's a logical switch to change to what we've got coming in right now. And you'll probably find you're going to be a lot fresher going into certain sessions. So we should see the performance start to drive up a little bit more, especially around the basketball court, right? Because your legs will be way fresher. But we have to just be diligent of like the knees, the ankles, and so forth. So we want to make sure the strength is still optimized. We're still getting the strength gains that we need as well, right? So we'll keep on touch on that week to week, okay?
Got it.
Good, man. It sounds like your ability to bounce back to normal when you have these little off days here and there, like something's thrown on your plate. Unfortunately, sorry to hear you were at the hospital all weekend. Like, shit, it's the fan like that. You go back to normal. It's like you just bounce back into it straight away. Whereas a lot of times before, maybe it's taken like a couple of weeks. So for some people, even it's a couple of months before they can get back into the swing of things, you know? So your ability to bounce back has been tremendous, man. Good work, brother. I think Vihar's just come in there. Yeah, Vihar's in. He must be working. He's listening in. Okay, so today's call, boys, we have eliminating pain and training without limits, but it's looking at what actually drives joint breakdown and how we can stay injury free. So I'm actually going to post. So a lot of you have been in this community quite a lot. So what are the first things we think of that will come to your mind now that you've been with us a while that you feel would drive joint pain the most? I'm gonna pose that question to you guys. You're gonna mute yourself or you can type in the chat if you want to. See Thompson's typing. He's probably got an answer coming in. It could be a number of things too. It might not just be one thing. It might be a couple of other things coming in too.
I'd say for me personally, it's just like trying to push weight rather than, doing, muscle contraction.
Yeah, so
Just.
just you're putting more stress on the joint itself, like overstressing the joint from what it's truly capable of at that time. So unpack that a little bit more. So you're correct in thinking that for sure. So if, for example, I'm just focused on progressive overload, I have to put another 5% on the bar next week. And then the week after I go up for another 5% on the bar because that's progressive overload. Well, what we need to look at there is like, and this will go into potentially what Matt was talking about with the RDL. So have you prepared your structure to be in that position with that amount of load? Like that's one of the keys that a lot of people break down on is because they chase progressive overload thinking it's got to be more reps. Sometimes it can be more reps, but like more load every week on the bar as a progressive overload pattern. When sometimes they haven't built up the resiliency in the tissue to warrant that. So what happens? Well, now I have to compensate. Right. So my muscle can't handle that. Like all the other muscles around the joints that I'm trying to train can't handle that load. And you have to compensate to do that. And all of a sudden the joint gets irritated. Right. The joint has to excessively bend or extend too much than what it's used to because you're asking it to, or you're sometimes forcing it into a position that it's not ready to go into. So it's not funny and it's funny at the same time. We were teaching a course and this coach was on the course and he was in shape, but we're warming up and we're saying you shouldn't be going past a range of motion that you can't actively take yourself into. He's like, oh, but when I sometimes I can't get down in the squat, but as I warm up, I can get into the range of motion. I'm like, yeah, because you're adding weight to the bar on your back and the weight's pushing you into the range. You can't actively pull yourself in. So it's like a funny thing that he couldn't get his head around at first, but once we sort of broke it down, it was like, well, what's happening if you can't control that pelvis as you come down? So let's say it's a squat, for example, and you're not actively flexing into that pelvis, and those hip flexors aren't controlling that pelvis, the abs aren't switched on and controlling that pelvis in the descent. Well, what's going to happen? Those muscles aren't strong enough to control it. So your pelvis is going to start tucking under, you're going to get an excessive arch into the low back. All of a sudden, your low back starts kicking ass, you know? So it's not the fact that your quads might be able to handle it. It's just there's other structures that aren't there to do the job with you, you know? So progressive overload for sure. What else could be a factor in joint pain?
Not enough water.
Yeah, Hydration will be a key for sure. Electrolytes around the workout help with hydration. Build on that a little bit more because you're on the right track with a few things too. So water could be one for sure. Dehydration is going to be a key. But think on the nutrition front a little bit more.
Non-inflammatory foods, trying to get more of the whole, less processed.
100%. So inflammation is going to be a big key. So inflammation can come in a few areas, right? So you've got inflammation with the gut, and sometimes you'll have issues with joints when there's a lot of inflammation running through the body. So you have to remember some of the protein structures from food are very are the same makeups as like collagen and ligaments and tendons and so forth. So if you have a leaky gut, you can have a protein running through your bloodstream and the immune system attacks that. And then any of the same protein structure is going to attack that again because it's signified that as like, it's identified as I need to get rid of this. This shouldn't be here in my body, in my bloodstream. So anything with the same pattern of amino acid sequences as that, it'll start to attack, the immune system will attack that as well because your immune system is amazing. So that's when you can start getting irritated joints and like your joints aching and so forth. So sometimes you might need a gut protocol to start clearing out a few things there, realigning that gut lining up a little bit more so you're not getting leaky gut. And all of a sudden, your joint pain goes away and you haven't done anything with it with training, you know? So inflammation is going to be a big key. One, gut health wise. And then two, from a training point of view as well. So if we're doing excessive amounts of volume, then I'm going to create a lot of muscle damage. So if I'm creating lots of muscle damage, I'm creating a lot of inflammation. So you're gonna have a negative effect here, right? So here's the thing with that effect. If I've created a lot of muscle damage, which is creating a lot of inflammation, the byproduct of that, sorry, let me see, lighting's coming up. The byproduct of that is you're gonna have a lower output from the brain to fire motor units because if inflammation's higher, that's causing more central nervous system fatigue. So the brain signifying I'm too fatigued. I'm still recovering from these sessions. So I'm going to downregulate how many muscle fibers I'm going to be able to recruit. But what do you do in the gym? Like Thompson just started off with. I got progressive overload, bro. I got to put the weight up. And you got muscle damage. You might be a little bit sore. There's still excessive inflammation going through the body. The brain's going, nope, I'm too fatigued. But you put the weight on the bar anyway because you types of guys would do it because you're beasts and you'll get in and get after it. But this is where we want that communication with you, right? So if like if you're feeling anything that's cranky, you have to let us know. And then we can assess certain things. So what's happening now is that I'm fatigued and my brain says, no, I'm not going to recruit these muscle fibers. But I'm adding that weight to the bar. Boom, you're gonna catch yourself in a scenario where your body can't output and you're stuck at the bottom of a squat or you have to compensate in a certain pattern. So it's having all of these areas lined up and making sure we're going through a specific period, like sometimes a periodized program and a periodized setting, but it's making sure, remember that we have to own and control every inch of that range of motion that we need to be in, right? So Shilash, you're going to be progressing on a few things now in terms of your training program. We're moving from the goblet squat. I'm going to start to push you a little bit more on other exercises because we need to start getting that range of motion back into your hips. Now you've only got one day, main day of legs. So that's going to allow us to, one, remove that excessive fatigue away. So that's what I was saying about the inflammation and causing too much fatigue, right? So if you think, here's another key I'll bring into in a second. If you think you're causing all of that muscle damage, you think the plyometrics you're doing is very fast eccentric work. Right, you're asking a lot from the eccentric component of plyometric work, and there's a lot of contractions. So you're going to create a lot of calcium ions, which cause the muscle damage. So if that's very high from excessive running, you get it from running. You're going to get it when I say running, it's concentric action, so it's not eccentric. But because you've got a lot of muscle contractions, you're going to go into fatigue. That's going to accumulate the calcium ions for the muscle contraction. Okay, so anytime a muscle contracts, your body releases calcium every time without fail. So it's going to release them. But the more you do of it, it comes to a point of tolerance where you can't clear it enough. So that creates the muscle damage. So if you're doing basketball Three times a week, so Monday, Wednesday, Friday, right? Or is it Tuesday, Thursday is the basketball?
Tuesday, Thursday.
Thursdays. And then you got the plyos three times a week.
Yeah.
And then you got legs three times a week on top of that, right? So you think about how much volume is going through that system. Now, the main way to create that muscle damage is the amount of high repetitions. So you think high repetitions are there for you, for sure. Lots of eccentric work and staying in the eccentric stretch for a long period of time and going to muscular failure. Now, you probably went to muscular failure quite a little bit sometimes, or your perceived failure in some of those training sessions, slash. But the main thing I'd see from you is the amount of volume that's going on in the week. So can you literally clear that inflammation from the volume of training? So that's why I said, like, it's time to pull back on the lower body. We'll hit the upper body a lot more for you. The arms are on the lower body day, because your arms are probably one of your best body parts. So we need to put more focus on the back, more on the delts and so forth, to bring that posture back in alignment. But what we're seeing, what I would expect now, is as you start to remove that fatigue away, your body can open up a little bit more, because, like, oh, okay, I'm a little bit, I got a little bit more range of motion to go here, because I can now control it. I'm not too fatigued to handle this, right? Because if your body's in a sympathetic state, this is a thing with, we do want people to do mobility, but if you've, who's, hands up, who's been to a yoga class here? I know Thompson has for sure, 100%. Been a yoga shalash?
I attempted, but if VR was here, he'd start laughing right now if he muted.
Still
my
here. You still
yeah,
here?
yeah.
So if you think about yoga, I'm a fan of doing yoga. I like yoga classes. I've done hot yoga once. That was a sweaty mess. But I'm a big fan of yoga classes. But what we have to understand with yoga, I don't believe it's the fact that we're just holding a muscle in a stretch position that gets us flexible. I don't believe that's technically true. It's part of it, but the main reason I feel is, I 99.9% certain that it's the breath, because you're breathing as you're holding that, and you're telling your nervous system to be calm in that position. So what happens when you're pretty sympathetic and you're in a high arousal state where your cortisol is high and you're very sympathetic, you're going to be breathing at a high rate, not a relaxed rate. But when cortisol is high, what happens with your arteries and your capillaries and so forth? They vasoconstrict, so they restrict blood flow or minimize the amount of blood flow. But what happens? Yes, Vihar. But what happens when I'm more calm and I breathe more resonantly, like we went through the muscle camp? You're taking longer exhales, those vasoconstricted arteries and so forth vasodilate and they open up. So what we're doing now is, if you're in a yoga class and you're actually holding that position and you can feel that stretch on the muscle, what they tell you to do, breathe, like breathe into it. So all of a sudden you feel everything just relax. So you think about that as the breath work. So this is why you'll see in some of your programs is like breath work to do in there as well, because it's going to calm you right down. It's going to open your joints up. And now you can access those ranges a little bit better. So that's why I've got send you that little bit of a breath work practice, Shalash, to start adding that in. So now we've, for your protocol, we're removing a lot of the excessive volume to bring that inflammation down a little bit more, because we've worked a lot of the strength into the hips now. Now we can just hit it once a week hard, get really, really strong. It might come a time we'll hit it twice a week. We're just going to assess as we go through the phases. But adding that lack of inflammation there, more recovery capacity there, and then adding the breath work in, a little bit of mobility for sure. Adding the breath work in, we should see that strength go up dramatically. Okay. Does that make sense, boys? Any questions on that so far? Right. Now, the other thing to consider too, especially around joints, is the structures of those joints as well. So we have tendons that attach muscle to bone. Okay, so we have to make sure that the tendons and all the collagen and all that stuff around the joint is well versed and well safe. So a lot of you might have collagen in your diet, so more collagenous foods. So that's going to help with the repair and structure of those. But we have to remember what type of training allows us to keep that tendon strong. And when we're getting the tendon strong, we want tendon stiffness. and it creates something called lateral force transmission. But what that does, the best training to really get those tendons strong and to create tendon stiffness. And this is the type of stuff that you would do before. This is like prep for plyometric work. So this is why I was mentioning to you, Shilash, on one of our first calls, is like the amount of plyometrics to do should be minimal. Is because if we unprepped strength work for that, you're going to be putting excessive force through the joints, which is then going to drive more inflammation up and reduce the amount of range of motion we're going to use on other things. So the best way to do that is heavy strength training. So we're talking like 5 repetitions, 4, 3 sometimes, getting very heavy loading. And that's going to cause that tendon to become very stiff and very strong. But again, I start to prep you for that. So can I access that range of motion, right? So remember, if I'm going to take my ankle through a full range of motion through a squat, well, I need to have stretched that ankle maximally to get that full length of the tendon, the Achilles tendon at the back. And if it's loading maximally and it's heavy enough, boom, it's got to stabilize. It's got to stabilize that ankle for you. Same thing with the knee joint. Same thing with the hip joint. You have to load it really, really well, safely for sure. But it's the heavy strength training that really prepares those tendons for the plyometric work further down the line, right? Sorry, just reformed tissue one. Thompson, just unmute yourself and just explain that a little bit more, mate.
Sometimes I feel quite stuck in terms of like my forearms or like certain parts of my back, and means I kind of feel a bit not right in the range of motion. And I just get some massage or Graston or some other thing to really break apart the fascia.
Yeah.
And that makes me able to lift properly again.
Yeah. So what's that actually doing, Thompson, when we're looking at the fascia? So if you think fascia is, I wouldn't say it's breaking it down. I say it's doing other things to it. So if we think about fascia is very, very dense, especially something like your IT band, for example. People think, oh, I can massage my IT band, I'll roll it on a foam roll, or I'll get somebody to like get the elbow through or a Graston tool through it. Your IT band's like a metal rod. Like it's impenetrable. Like it's super, super stiff. So those things won't actually break anything down. But the thing that fascia has a lot of, it has 9 times more proprioceptors than muscle. So if I'm running a fascial tool like Graston or over the fascia, what it's doing is stimulating the proprioceptors, which desensitizes them and allows them to switch off. So you basically switched off the proprioceptors to allow the, so if you think what these proprioceptors do, let's say it's a muscle in the muscle, you've got something called Golgi tendon organs, which it's located around the tendons, right? So that's going to send certain things and send messages to the brain. And in the muscle, you have muscle spindles. So they sense like tension. So the muscle spindles and the Golgi tendon organs, they're going to restrict how much you can move through a range of motion. Because if you're fatigued from the brain, so everything goes back to the brain and back down. Like that's the way the commands work. So if my muscle spindle sends a message to my brain and goes, nope, or the brain's going, I'm too fatigued, I'm not letting you go, right? I'm fatigued. There's no way you're going past this point because I can't recruit as many motor units or muscle fibers to allow you to extend a little bit more because the whole system is fatigued and we're still recovering, right? So it's things like that we have to take into consideration, Thompson. So what happens then if you switch that off with a Graston tool and that muscle spindle switched off and the GTOs are switched off and your brain goes, oh, they're not kicking in, I should be able to go. What's going to happen? You got heavy weight on your back, it's going to hurt you. So those types of things should be away from the session for sure. The other things that two other things to consider, if you want to improve fascia more, you need to be very hydrated. Number one, it's very dependent on hydration. And number two, you need like rhythmical motion. So if I'm going to warm it, like you need heat and rhythmical motion. So if I'm going to really affect fascia, you need to be flowing as you do things. So like imagine like Tai Chi and things like that. That's going to allow you to do it. So you want to bring your body heat up as much as possible. So if you're doing that in the sauna, like that would help very, very well, but obviously you need to make sure you're hydrating along the sauna too. But the main thing to consider there is the compensatory thing around the joints. So if you're getting anything around the shoulder, What would be the first thing though I would ask you to do now, knowing me for this long, Thompson? If there's anything, I actually share this on my, so if you follow me on Instagram, I share this in my stories the other day. What would be the first thing I would do if somebody's got a shoulder problem and it's feeling a little bit like you can't access that range?
Feels like a test.
Oh, this is gonna be a test today. Whoever wins doesn't get the mass test next week. The first thing I would do is breath work. If you've got a shoulder issue, breath work. And not to, for a calming sensation, yes. But if you think about what that shoulder blade does, so if my shoulder can't access a range or it feels stuck, all that's telling me is it can't upwardly rotate and it can't downwardly rotate effectively. It can't protract and it can't retract, or it can't elevate and depress. It can't do those things effectively. But what does that shoulder blade sit on? It sits on my rib cage, and my rib cage is my spine. Make sense? So if that's dysfunctional, there's something dysfunctional in the spine and the rib cage straight away, because I should be able to be in a position where my shoulder blade can actively and physically move through the ranges of motion it should. It's just something stopping it. So you see, there's dysfunction at the thoracic spine, which is probably most time the case. Okay. And number two, because of that dysfunction, you've got muscles that are inactive. They don't switch on. So you've got the serratus that should be active. You've got your external rotators and internal rotators of the shoulder joint, which should be active. But also that thing to help pull you back in those positions, you've got your mid back and your rhomboids. They're very strong muscles. So if they're not physically able to do that, there's typically a dysfunction at the thoracic spine. And what causes the thoracic spine to be in there? It's your diaphragm. So if your diaphragm is switched off, it's not allowing you to, one, pull oxygen into the system, which means you've got to shallow breathe a little bit more and to get more air in. So if you need to create space, if you're doubled over like this and you're flexed, to create more space to get more air into the deeper part of your lungs, your shoulders do this. So if you ever find yourself hunched, and that's one of the reasons, because your body's trying to create space to get more oxygen into the lungs, and that's excessive movement. You don't actually just walk around like it's the guy of the Adams family, looked like the Adams family, Uncle Fester, like Uncle Fester. Then yeah, you don't walk around too much like that, but you will get a slight elevation of the shoulder joint. So sometimes you'll get neck pain and upper traps are overactive and so forth. That's trying to just get space through the trunk here to get more air into the lungs, because the diaphragm can't pull. So the more you actively train the diaphragm through the breath work, Shalash will know this if he's doing his 40 minutes of breath work practice that I've sent him. I'd actually did it last Saturday, Shalash. And the best way to do it is use like a training session. So don't do it just before bed, because you're going to feel like you'll be buzzing for a little bit. But use it like a training session. So when it's like breathe, like two in, two out, like you're trying to expand the belly and the ribs and really use the diaphragm to do it. So that's just that session alone should start to open up the ribs, open up the scapula and the shoulder blades, and allow your thoracic spine to move a little bit differently. So that's the first thing I go with, Thompson. And I'm sure I've sent you the link to the breath work, but I'll send it again anyway, just in case. But that's my first go-to, the breath. So when we think about joint pain, so we've covered a lot around ankles and knees and in the squat and so forth. We'll cover low back in a second, because I know Matt, you've been going through the RDL with Steve, so we'll bring that in too. But when we're thinking a shoulder, if you ever get any shoulder pain, the first thing to do is breathe. And there's a few activation drills I'm going to be filming for a client, so I might post that into the group for you boys. Hands up if you've ever had shoulder pain. I know Thompson, you've had an issue. Anybody else had shoulder pain? Yeah. So I'll see if I can post on the WhatsApp group and share with you boys, just so you can get an idea of what we're looking at. Because there's some simple stuff to do, like the serratus muscle here that's in the front of the shoulder here, or just under the scapula, which is into the ribs. You can use things like foam rollers on the wall, and you're really driving the elbow forward into the pad. You're keeping the elbow in, and you're driving up the wall, and you're coming down the wall. And as you go up, you're really trying to activate that serratus. That can help switch that on for sure, switch the scap on. There's simple things to do when you can pause in that position. And what will happen if you're there and all your intention is to do then is breathe into the ribs, And then exhale. And then push even more. So using the breath and using the diaphragm to allow you to open all of the rib cage up and just get that diaphragm contracting and relaxing, contracting and relaxing. And you'll find that all of the ribs open up because all of those intercostals that attach to the ribs here all attach into the spine. So if I can open these up straight away, my spine can start to elongate a little bit more. I can actually like do a chiropractic drill on myself just by breathing, like, or my spine will start to crack if you get really good at it and you get strong at those breathwork practices. So shoulder pain, breath first. Obviously, you can still do some massage stuff on your shoulder if that helps free up the proprioceptors a little bit more just to get pain down a little bit. And then obviously, we just need those fundamentals back in place. Does that make sense, Thompson? Good man. I'll send you that link to the breathwork. It's the one we do in Costa Rica. The one we did in Costa Rica every day. So I'll send that over to you. That's a good one. Matt, give us some insights into what you've been doing with Steve, because you're obviously accessing the ranges a little bit more now as well. So Steve's going to go a little bit lower.
He basically told me to go lower, so I went lower. Because I came back from camp and I was like, okay, this is my range of motion, and I was hitting maybe right about the knee or just probably about the knee, maybe even a little higher. And then he sent me a video and he's like, hey man, you need to get like we want to get you horizontal. And he's like, here's a video of me doing it. And he was deadlifting four plates on each side. And I said, great, love that goal. Sounds like a long-term thing. Let me know what we got to do to get there. And he just wrote back like, just breathe and get there. And so I gave it a go and just was started light and went really slow and paused at the bottom and came out of it and felt fine and kept going for five. I mean, I loaded up the most I'd done was 275, I think, which I haven't even tried that in an RDL. I was doing like 95, maybe 115, 135. So I would say all I did was like take a deep breath and like I stood up tall, but then crunched a little bit to close the ribs and just braced like hell and moved
That's it, man.
slow.
So you have to remember, so there's a couple of patterns there to think about, right? So I know Steve is very good at getting that rib over the pelvis and making sure you're braced. So one of those things is obviously going to be the diaphragm and obviously the abdominal work to really, because he's probably put that into your program anyway. I know Steve very well. He's very good.
Yeah, we started there.
Yeah, exactly. He's very logical, man. He's a great coach. And once you're in that pattern, you're holding that position. And you can get into that flex position. What did I say earlier that allows you to get into there more? Once you start to go into the range and you can hold, right? So let's say you started light and you built it from there. You've gone really light, you've gone deep into the range, you went down, you're like, okay, I'm fine. Like my ribs are stacked there, my low back's fine. And you held it. What's happening in that position now? The muscle spindles have gone, I can stretch. I'll send a signal to the brain, I'm fine. Comes back down, go, do it again. Add more load, boom, go again. So all you're doing is reinforcing the pattern with the GTOs, the Golgi tendon organs, and the muscle spindles in the muscle, and they sense that tension. So all that's telling the brain is going, I'm fine, I got it. Right? Nothing else is moving but the muscles that you need to train. So it's going back to that, owning that end range of motion, or the range is the motion you can control in that moment. And all that's doing is those muscle spindles are sensing that, sending the message to the brain, and the brain sending back going, contract, go, contract, go. That's the foundations of owning the end range or the range you're moving in and full control. So all you're doing is coaxing that set by set, set by set. And then what happens week after week, all of a sudden you're now doing 275, right? Which is great. So logically, it's like sometimes you do have to stack things so we know it's safe. And the form is on point. And then we're going to see how much we can go light. But because you went light first, it allowed those sensors to kick in. Because what did people typically do? Add the load on the bar, don't warm up effectively, don't go through a foundation phase of like skill acquisition, which is what Steve's obviously done with you, prepared that skill. And all of a sudden, you can load it because you prep the tendons and the tension proprioceptors to do what they got to do. And you've made it safe.
We did
So
a lot of isolateral stuff too, with a bar with dumbbells, and he kept telling me you can get horizontal, like don't have your knee going out so far, like butt goes back, shoulders, you know, headlights on your shoulders, they're still pointing forward or on your hips. So that's not twisting. He did have me go, at least maybe it was the lighter and single leg stuff, but he was saying, get your weight on the ball of your foot and your big toe. And that's going to let you get deeper into the position, which sounds counterintuitive to the tripod idea from camp of need to be like equal parts weight on the foot. But in those light loads, like it worked and I was able to get low. And so I'm assuming that was skill acquisition. And now we're loading and stabilizing.
Yeah, because you can have connections, especially for the forefeet and the big toe. You have to remember the big toe provides us a lot of force as well to run that big, especially around the toes, to push off from too. So getting that in there, getting that big toe down, is going to allow certain things to happen at the heel as well. So sometimes what will happen is you'll compensate and you'll go to the outside, or you'll only push through the heel. But what happens if you just push down into the heel? You don't get the pronation you might need. So that tends to like come off the big toe. So if I'm pushing that big toe down, it's allowing me a little bit more stability through the forefoot, which then allows me to pronate down a little bit more. So what happens when I pronate, if my feet do this? So imagine these are my sexy feet, and this is my heel. What bone sits on top of my heel? It's my lower leg. My tibia, it's called my tibia. And then your knee joint is here, and then your upper leg is there, and then that goes into the hip. So if my feet are like this, and my feet's like that, and this is my tibia, and my feet actually pronate, what's going to happen to this? It's going to rotate down and in. Make sense? If that rotates down and in. There's a funny, we used to sing this back in the UK. You probably sang it in the US as well, and probably in Australia as well. Thompson, you grew up in Australia, right? The ankle bone's connected to the leg bone. The leg bone's connected to the knee bone, and so on. Everything's connected. So if one bone moves, another one has to move as well, but it moves at a different rate. So if my foot pronates, typically what happens is a side shift. So you get like a little bit of shift on the inside in the side-to-side plane, but there's also like a rotational plane. So as my leg rotates in a little bit and comes in, my knee goes in a little bit and rotates in as well. And then my upper leg rotates in a little bit, still a bit, but less. So what happens now is as I get that forefoot down, my big toe does that. It allows the pronation all of a sudden, because everything's rotated in. What muscles are attached to my hips, my glutes? What muscles are attached to my lower leg, my hamstrings? So if they rotate, what have they done? They've lengthened in the rotational plane. And they're decelerating that from the top, but that's force from the bottom. So if my big toe doesn't do that, it doesn't allow enough pronation of the foot. And that doesn't unlock all this stuff. So just by default, he's giving you the inside to go push your toe into the ground. So an analogy I used to do is like, imagine there's a bug under your foot and you're going to crush it with your big toe. Crush it. All of a sudden, everything switches on.
And that's probably still resulting in the tripod stable position, not moving me out of it, but maybe getting me more into it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just creating a little bit more stability. So it's going to be there. It's not like you're going to be like up on your heels are going to be off the floor, right? It's just big toes driving that stability a little bit more, which is helping you pronate, which actually reinforces that heel because it pronates into a little bit. All of a sudden, you've got the internal rotation to open up, and now you've unlocked the hamstrings and the glutes to decelerate that load that's going down. That's the connection points as you go up. Like the chain reaction, basically. Yeah, man. Great job. So we're expecting 325 on the next call, yeah?
Might be able to get there.
Lock and loaded, boy. Love it.
Next month's call.
Mate, that's the 30-day goal. Like, if that's the goal, that's the goal, right? This is why we wanted to come on, like, at the end of the month. What went well this month? Tell us what happened. Okay, what's your goal for next month? We want you to be like, you can push and push and push. All we're going to do is just unlock the big toe a little bit, and we're going to give you these little cues and so on. Shalash is going to be handing off 25-year-olds on the basketball court and smashing Vihar left, right, and center. They'll be fighting at the back. There he is. I knew I'd get him back in. But yeah, man, this is what we want to see. We want this gets us up like all day, every day. I talk about this to Dan, Steve, Greg, everybody. Like, my client's doing this, so we got this goal for next. We love this stuff. So you guys coming on every week and telling us you win it at this, and I'm stuck with this. What can I do? Like, this is what we live for. We love it. Got to make sure you win. Good job, Matt. Thanks for sharing, man. Mr. Clark, where are you, brother? He's probably having a little conversation with Open Claw or something. What's he doing? There
Sorry.
he is. How you doing, brother? How's the knee and so forth coming on now? All cleared up?
Knee's good. I just wouldn't mind getting some BPC. I think that's the next
Awesome.
step. Still just it's just weirdly sticking around a bit. It's like about 85% right now.
Where, what part of the knee is it?
Inside, I'd say like on the left knee, it's like the sort of to the right around the kneecap.
Okay. Got it. Okay. You haven't started.
It's like the internal, like in.
I got it. So let's say, for example, your teardrop muscle on your quad. It's like the inside of the leg. You should have like a teardrop muscle that goes on the inside of the knee. Is it below that? Into the
More
joint?
towards the shin, like kind of where the shin comes in.
Oh, okay. Okay, that could be calf. Okay. Yeah, we'll look at getting some BPC there for sure. That's going to accelerate stuff up. Maybe some TB4 as well, so thumb some beta 4 could
Yeah, I
help
can't get that here. I
whatever.
can only get TB500 here for some reason, so.
Okay. We'll work it out, man.
Yeah.
Just trying to think of anything else that might help with that. Yeah, because if it's like 85%, you haven't started curling or anything like that, no? Do you feel it on the
No.
deep squats anymore, or is it just on any type of squat?
It's yeah, just more like the lunge right now, so I'm not really doing a ton of squats. And it's just like sort of at the deep end of it. Like I can get almost all the way down and it doesn't really hurt, but it just, you can just kind of feel it. Like it's not, that's why I'm kind of don't want to be a baby about it. Just,
Yeah, you're good. So it's more on the like a dynamic lunge type of thing, yeah?
yeah.
Okay. Okay. So what we might do with your program, we'll prep you for that a little bit more. So instead of actually foot into the ground, dynamically come out, there may be some split squat variations that we'll typically utilize. So remember when we did split squats where it's like 1.25 rep? So there's progressions that you would use or we could use to prep you for the lunges. So there's one. What's called a myotatic. So this is something that I would probably put in for shalash when we're going further down and towards more plyometric work. So what the myotatic method does, it prepares the tendon for elasticity. So because you have to get that stretch reflex cycle. So that's where it's going to start to train. And when you hit, so for example, if I'm going to jump off a box and my feet hit the ground, and there's a point where you decelerate and then you accelerate out of it. It's called the amortization phase. So what this is doing here is teaching the tendons to become elastic, to go in and then back out again, in and then back out again. But with this is without the dynamic force of the foot in the floor. So I can prep the tendon to become that stretch shortening part. So what we might do, Chris, is have you go down, and when instead of just the normal 1.25 where you're doing like the muscle one, you go down, you come up a quarter, then you drop fast and come back out. But you're only decelerating a quarter range. So it's not like your foot's hitting the ground and all your body weight's coming down onto it. You've already controlled the full range, full control. You come up a quarter. So it's only a small amount of range, then boom, boom, come straight in and out. So that's going to be a little less force than what's probably going on through the tendon right now or through the joint. Then
Bulgarians don't bother me at all, so.
there we go. So if the Bulgarians don't do it, it's not so much a joint thing, it's more of a force thing where it's like decelerating too much force. So the logical regression progression model will be to train that elasticity of the tendon. So we'll do a quarter myotatic and then the next progression to increase the force demand on that tissue is as you come down now, instead of going all the way down, coming up a quarter, then boom, boom, straight back in and out, you go down and a third from the bottom, boom, straight in and out. So you just increase the range demand of that tendon that has to decelerate. So you're teaching to become more elastic and train the stretch shortening cycle. Then we can then progress to body weight lunges, for example, right? So now you should be able to tolerate that a little bit more. Then we go on and on and on. Make sense? Got it, man. I'll make some adjustments. So we'll try that. Because if the Bulgarians are good, it might not, it's not a joint thing. It means it's a force thing. Like it's just too much force that your tendon has to decelerate at that point. Because you have to remember, if you're using dumbbells in your hands as well. So imagine just your body weight alone without dumbbells. You're putting, there's a speed element to it. So it's still going to be in control, but you're putting momentum into that as well. So it's not like a split squat where you're just stuck, static. You're going down and up. Your foot stepping forward, and there's momentum going down into that too. Right. So you think if I run, excuse me, if I'm running, that's like, or I'm jumping, that's 7 to 10 times body weight going through my joints as I decelerate down and my foot hits the ground. Right. Now you add dumbbells to that as well. That's a lot more force that your tendon has to tolerate. So we just have to scale it back a little bit, train the tendon to do what it needs to do, and then we'll place it back in a few weeks. Get you strong, boy. Just get it out. And then it's a different ball game when you're doing that with squats as well, by the way. That's fun. That's very fun. So Shalash, get prep, man. Get ready. Because this is the type of stuff you have to sequentially go through in terms of being ready to be very dynamic and athletic. So like the one thing I'd want all of us to be able to do is still train for speed as we age. That's one thing I'm going to need to keep hold of. So I'm in my muscle building, gaining phases at the moment and so on. But I'll be moving into more strength because once you get bigger, you got the potential to get strong, right? So once you put muscle mass on, you got way more cross-sectional area to really develop strength into now, right? So I have to remember strength is still neurological too. But once you're building those neurological patterns and you've got more size to get strong, you could be an absolute animal. But it's a different ball game then, which because once you get strong and you get those tendons strong, you train the tendon stiffness. Now you've got the ability to go through that type of stuff that I was talking to Chris about, Shalash, where we're going into that stretch, shorten. Okay, now we take it up a notch. A third, boom, boom, a third, boom, boom. Now we're adding load to that on a back squat. Now we'll take that through the back squat. Now, as I'm progressing you through that, we're going to be doing some like just small squat jumps. So we've got some angle hops. We've got all of those things starting to come in. Now we're doing depth jumps. So we're coming off a box and jumping onto the floor. Or we're jumping onto a box, right? So there's all of these patterns that we can start to build in, but I have to prep at every stage. And I think tonight's call is sort of delved into a little bit more detail on how to get there that we have in the past. But that's the thought process to it, man. We have to stage everything correctly so you don't break. And then once you can do that, those types of plyometrics, that's when you still sprint when you're 70, 80. Like you should still be sprinting, man. There's no way. I don't see any reason you should stop as long as you're training for it. If you trained and prep well, you should be able to do it until you're well into your 80s. That's my opinion anyway. That's my goal. Still sprinting when I'm 80. That makes sense, Shalash? There he is.
If you're getting chased by a bear,
You better run, man.
better be
You
able to run.
better run, or you better be a strong dude to kill that bear off.
I don't want to die first. I'll
There
let
you
the
Throw V. Make sure Vihar's there with you. I seen that. Saw his guns at the muscle camp. He can fight with you.
I can just trip him.
Vihar's gone first. Fight to the death. Love it, boys. Absolutely love it. Any other questions from tonight, boys, in terms of anything information I've given you so far, or any questions you had about pain and joints and things like that as you were coming into the call? Hopefully, we've given you some good insights into stuff.
I did have one question on the I put in the text. I don't know if you were able to read it. The laser or the red light therapy.
Yeah.
What take on that?
I'm a fan of red light therapy, man. You mean like the boards you put up on the walls and stuff and it just shines in your face and stuff in the morning, all over your body?
So direct, like kind of high-powered laser that people are trying to do at chiro clinics and things like that.
Oh, I'm not too sure. I'm familiar with the red light therapy, so that's it's going to have a good mainly affect our mitochondria, right? Yeah, is it like that? Yeah,
Yeah.
amazing effect on mitochondria. I'm a big fan. It's actually been shown, like when you look into it, yeah, get it on. That's great. When you look into it, it can improve the mitochondria in the eye, so it can start to rebuild the cellular function around the eyes and stuff. So I'm not saying it's gonna. Thompson's got all the gear. Check him out. I'm not gonna say it's gonna reverse blindness or anything like that, but you got to think if you're building up more mitochondria on the anything, it's gonna get better, right? So I know a few guys are running some peptides in terms of SS31 and MOTC, some of you use as well. Those things are going to help the mitochondria do what it needs to do. But you have to remember that those are targeting the tissue to specifically do one thing, right? So SS31 is obviously going to bind cardiolipin to help solidify all of the mitochondria up to heal, to prevent energy leakage and create less oxidative stress and so forth. But you tie that in with something like the red light therapy, and all of a sudden those are getting better and better and better. I'll have to find some of the research I saw on it, but it was crazy, man. Like when you started to use the light, like from the sun, how many of you go, like Shilash will know this because he lives in LA. He's probably in one of the best places to live for sunlight throughout the year. How good do you feel when you spend more time in the sun? There's a reason for it, man. Like your body's way better at making energy. The sun's amazing. So that's one of the closest things you'll get if you can get some good red light therapy going on. It doesn't have to be doing like hours a day, like a good 10, 15 minutes to start the day up, and you're good to go. My wife's actually got one of the mask ones, so she puts it on. So I've been using it. So when I put it on, I'll be looking at the red light inside the mask, so I can get the eye function as well. Sometimes people close their eyes. I'm like, no, I'll just stare at the light because it'll affect the mitochondria in the eyes. So it can help rebuild those up. Yeah, I'm a big fan, man. Good question. There's quite a few products out there now in terms of branding. I'll have to research some of the better ones for you, but there's some decent ones. There's a place I went. I took my wife to one of these recovery centers, and there was sauna. They had infrared sauna. They had cold plunge, and they had those big sensory lights right up on the wall that you cover the whole body. So we're doing rounds of that. It was like a little circuit. We would go in and out, and we're doing that for about 2 hours. So in there for a while. And next time you come to London, Shalash, we'll go and train with Thompson again. They've got a cold plunge sauna place right over the road. So it's a place called Arc, which is fantastic. So we'll do some cold plunging there as well.
For sure. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, Alex Fergus, Red Light Therapy YouTube channel. Thompson just put that in there for you, Shalash.
Okay, got it.
Okay, gents. Boys, thank you so much for your time on coming on with me tonight. I've enjoyed it myself. Hopefully it's given you some insights and on what you should be potentially looking at further down the line with your training, and you're getting that stretch shortening cycle going, and your Matt Samira is doing 450 pounds soon enough on the RDL. Mate, I'm gonna be watching, man. I'm gonna be making
Trying to
sure
beat
you
Steve.
telling you, mate. Boys, you have a great rest of your day. Thompson, like me, you better be getting to bed now in a second. Chris, I'll be messaging you tomorrow, man. We'll see if we can jump on the call tomorrow, and we'll chat those peptides and give you some of those peptides, mate. Legends, boys. Shalash, we'll catch up tomorrow too, man. We got a call booked in.
Yep, first
Thanks,
thing.
guys. Speak soon, boys.
Thank you, boys.